Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Great. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of TechNet Radio. Tony Patterson, Senior Technical Evangelist out of the Southeast. On the show with me today, again, is Simon May. This is part two of our series where we're talking about remote desktop services and VDI and Server 2012 and all the goodness around Windows 8 and how that works. So, Simon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tommy. Nice to be back on TechNet Radio again.
Great. So, we'll dispense with the history since most people probably watched number one, and yep. We want to jump right in so that, you know, we showed a little bit of demo on our radio show prior to this, and what we did was we talked about Windows 8, we talked about Server 2008 R2 RDS versus 2012 RDS, 2012 R2 RDS, the improvements on the networking stack, improvements on 3D graphics, and just overall usability, flexibility that comes with the new solution. So today, I believe what we're going to do is dive into how do you do it, right?
Yeah.
How do you get it configured?
That's exactly it. We're going to have a look at the kind of the building of the infrastructure, the really interesting stuff, frankly, how this all fits together, how you can kind of quickly build your own proof of concept back in the lab so that you can start to explore some of these things, build some of the demo content that we showed in the previous video.
Mm-hmm. Very
cool. So what we are actually technically going to do is we're going to get hold of I've got a couple of hosts available. The first one is a remote desktop session host, which we're going to then completely configure. And we're going to use the quick configuration route for that. So that essentially means that we're going to build something for a proof of concept. And as we go through and build that, we're going to have a look at why you probably aren't going to use the quick wizard in production, because
right.
You've got those things to worry about, like security and DMZs and that kind of thing. And the quick wizard just doesn't help you with any of that stuff. It's just to get a POC up and running, really. And then we're going to flip and have a look at the admin experience, have a look at how it works within Server Manager and why having all of your VDI and RDS management in one place in Server Manager is such a cool thing. We're also then going to move over and have a look at VDI itself. So we're going to build out a very quick VDI environment and take a quick look at, you know, the buttons you need to click in order to get that up and running. And we'll probably talk a little bit about storage, I guess, along the way as well.
All right, perfect. So I guess what we'll talk about first is just getting started. The quick wizard, like you said, that's not something that you might want to do in production, but something you may want to do as proof of concept or a lab environment. A lot of the lab guides do go that route. Anything with certificates or anything behind the scenes that you've done ahead of time that may, you know, shortcut some of the time but is still required?
Well, there are a couple of things. So inside of the environment that we're going to be using, I've actually got an enterprise CA in place. So that means that all of my devices that I'm going to be using as client devices are going to trust the certificates that are issued by the enterprise CA because they're inside the domain. If you're doing this kind of stuff externally, you're probably going to want to be using publicly signed certificates. Say you wanted to stand your remote desktop web access server up onto inside your DMZ, give it a public-facing IP, all that kind of stuff. You're probably going to want to get proper SSL certs in place for that. We are, however, just going to be using them from inside of our enterprise CA. Other than that, the only other stuff that's standing up is a DC, DNS, and those kind of services in the background as well.
Great. All right, so let's dive on in. Let's see the first part.
Okay, cool. Let's take a look into Server Manager then. Okay, so we're here on a desktop. We're actually looking at the Server Manager console on one of my servers, which in this case happens to be my DC. Obviously, just a very quick word of warning. Don't use your DC as your primary source for administering your entire domain. Probably a bad idea. Probably better to build something which is a little bit more intended for that particular purpose. But in this case, we're just managing a few other servers through Server Manager. I've already been in and added my remote desktop server in, and we're going to build out a very quick session collection here. Not something you'd normally do in practice, but as a way of getting up and running on a proof of concept really quickly, it's a great idea to be able to do that. In order to add that, if you don't know Server Manager very well, just went to add servers, bang, typed in the details for the server, RDS, did a quick search inside of my AD, it found the server, added it over, clicked OK, and I have my server in there. It's gone off, it's connected to it, it's pulled back performance information and pulled back any other information. Now what I need to do, though, is start to configure this server for remote desktop services. So Tommy, I'm sure you've seen this 1,001 times before, but what we're going to do, very quickly go to Add Roles and Features, and we're going to use the wizard, which is going to guide us through a remote desktop services based installation just here. So say OK to it.
Right, this is the really cool part about Server Manager, the ability to actually roll out features, roll out roles, monitor the progress, reboot if needed, all from one console. So very cool stuff. Now, the quick start version, someone's walking us through, and this is just a quick and dirty way of getting into either sharing an application or terminal server session or a VDI session. And I still use the word terminal server just because people are familiar with that. We've actually called that session-based desktops now. But go ahead, Tom.
You're absolutely right. It's the it's just a really super easy way of getting up and running. So we'll say session-based and we'll hit next. Then we need to decide whereabouts we want to place the various different roles for remote desktop services. In this case, we're going to place everything onto RDS queue because we're using the quick start. But normally you'd be a little bit more planful about this. You'd put your web access and gateway roles into probably your edge network. You put your connection broker behind the firewall so that the gateways can talk to the connection broker, and then the connection broker would talk to a group of either session hosts or virtualization hosts. But we're getting up and running very quickly with a quick start. And we need to take one of those servers out of there. We don't want to be deploying to the DC. I actually did that intentionally. Let's just zoom back out from this for a second. And we just want to add in our DC again. The reason that is just to show you how to take something out of there. That confused me for quite a long time when I started using Server Manager back in 2012. Being able to remove something from the selection wizard just requires a right click on the server that you want to remove. It's going to go away. It's going to go and just check that the connection broker, that the RDS queue server is going to be able to do what we need to. And in fact, it's noticed that server has a restart that needs to be done on that server. So we'll just go ahead and get that happening. In order to do that, I'm just going to bring up a quick PowerShell prompt. Do restart-computer. We'll provide the computer name. Handy little way to be able to get to things. RDS queue. Hit enter. That's then going to go off and tell our RDS queue server to do a very quick restart for us. Okay, so having got that restart happening, we'll now hit the next button and allow it to install on RDS queue. It's going to go away, check that there aren't any further restarts pending on that server, make sure that it's completely capable of hosting the role that we're about to drop onto it, and it'll come back to us in a couple of seconds time to say, hey, you can carry on. There we go. Okay, now it's going to tell us exactly what it's going to do. It's going to drop the connection broker role on there. It's going to drop the web access role on there, and it's going to drop the session host role on there. I'm going to tick the box to say that we want to restart the server automatically if needed. As Tommy mentioned a little bit earlier on, one of the best things about Server Manager is that it's built on top of PowerShell workflows, and they persist across reboots. So we can actually say restart, and things will just continue with that deployment if necessary. Let's go and hit deploy, and then let's just really quickly talk about those roles that we're installing. For a start, we're installing the connection broker role, and we'll see a little network map a little later on. The connection broker is kind of at the heart of any remote desktop deployment, and basically what that role does is it says when it sees an incoming connection, is the user that's making this connection already running on either a virtual desktop or a session desktop somewhere? If they are, they'll obviously get reconnected back into that same session. If they're not, then they'll get connected to a new session. And if that's running on a session host server, that's a pretty trivial thing to do. Just connect them into a running session host server, get things up and running. If they're connecting into a VDI environment, a virtual desktop, then we're going to actually go and power on the virtual machine for them and get it up and running if it's not turned on. And if there is a machine already turned on that's capable of hosting that particular user's session, then they'll be connected into that machine. The next role that we add in here is the remote desktop web access role. And that's essentially an IIS-based website, which allows our users to go to something nice, simple, click on an icon on the website, and they'll have their session start up. It also performs one other really cool little thing, which is that it provides kind of an RSS feed of all of the capabilities that have been made available for a particular user. So if they've been given a session collection, if they've been given a remote app collection, if they've been given a VDI session, they'll get an icon which allows them to connect into that. That RSS feed can be hidden behind a DNS CNAME lookup, and then you can go to any device which has the Microsoft RDP client on it. So that could be a Windows device, a Windows phone device, an iOS device, a Mac, it could be an Android device. You type in your email address, does a DNS lookup, finds the remote desktop web access role service that's published hopefully out there on the internet, and then it provides access directly through that client, that native client, to all those services. So if you're on a Windows desktop, for example, you'll actually get start screen icon or start screen tiles for each application which has been published to you, or start screen tiles for each desktop which has been published to you. So it makes things start to feel really, really native. The next thing that we have in there is the gateway service. And if you're, we aren't actually deploying the gateway service at this point because this is a proof of concept type deployment. We don't need it. The gateway service is really important for keeping the environment completely secure. What that does is it takes the traffic from the web access role service, so essentially traffic that's going over the port 443, and then for each person's session, it converts that through to something that can be connected to the connection broker, and then thus through to an actual session in the back end. So it's really performing a gateway, a translation type role for all of our connections, and it really is what makes things secure. Without that service in place, things aren't particularly secure. Finally, the other thing we are deploying here is the session host server. So as Tommy described earlier, it's the replacement for terminal services. It allows us to have multiple people log on to one Windows server, and they all get their own session. And there's some pretty cool stuff that goes in there around making sure that people get their own fair share of resources. In fact, we call those that resource allocation fair share. It's going to make sure that no one person gets too much CPU assigned to them. And if they start to get really CPU intensive, we're actually going to start to pare them back a little bit and restrict how much CPU they're going to get so that other people can continue to work on that particular server. If we want to, we can have a little bit more granular control over that, but out of the box, fair share will start to help make sure that everything comes together and everybody can use the environment correctly. I guess also, as we'll see in a few minutes' time, once this is all built out, we can actually start to scale out all of the roles inside of a deployment. So, for example, we can have multiple gateways at the front end. That's a pretty simple thing to do. We just need a few IIS servers, and we're going to load balance against those IIS servers. We might have multiple gateways. Again, exactly the same thing. We're going to have those load balanced against them. When we get down to the connection broker, making that highly available is a slightly trickier task. Because if we think about what the connection broker is actually doing, when you install the connection broker role, you look under the hood and you find that along with the Windows Server connection broker role, you also get an installation of the WID, the Windows Internal Database. That's great for a single installation, but WID is essentially a SQL-esque database, which is great for a single instance, not particularly brilliant if you've got multiple machines connected into it. Certainly doesn't give you huge amounts of reliability, which is what you'd be looking for inside of a deployment where you're deploying multiple copies of a role, particularly for HA. In that case, what we have to do, drop in one or more connection broker servers, and then we also have to drop in a server running SQL Server, preferably SQL Server Enterprise, so that we can deploy an always-on cluster. Once we've done that, we actually have a database which is going to be held on an always-on cluster, which means that that always-on cluster is always going to be available to the brokers wherever they're connecting from. It also means that should one broker go down, one SQL server go down, one gateway go down, one web access role go down, after that point, everything is completely highly available. And obviously for multiple session host or VDI servers, we can just add those in as well. And the connection broker will deal with the kind of the load balancing and spreading out the workload there. Wizard's just finished, which I think you've got to admit was a monumental piece of filling in whilst the progress bars run through there. It tells us we've got access to our remote desktop web access role. And if I could just go and click on this URL, the very first thing that we'll get is a bright red error message saying that everything in the world will go wrong if we continue. Just go and continue to that. That's just because we haven't yet put in place certificates to increase the trust in the HTTPS, the SSL connection here, and a couple of other things. I can now log on with anybody inside of my domain. I'll type in corp/Alice and password of, in fact, let's use corp Dan, because Dan exists. corp/Dan and its password. And we can automatically see the things that we just published out. So when we created our quick start deployment here, we automatically published through that the very best version of Calculator we could find, which is Calculator running on a server. Everybody knows far more accurate than Calculator running on a desktop machine. Of course, it's not. It's exactly the same code. But, right. You kind of get the picture. It is there, and it looks like a completely native app. That's actually a copy of Calculator running on my remote machine. Probably a little bit easier to see is if I open up Paint, click Connect. That's going to very quickly open up Connect, running as a remote app. Notice if I can drag this around, and things look pretty good. If I do go and do File Open, then we'll see that I'm actually starting to browse my remote file system versus, let's go and open up the local file system on this machine. Here you can see a couple of disks.
We even published Halo Spartan Assault just to see what would happen, and it wasn't too bad, actually. It was, the graphics engine kicked in. We were using the remote FX cards, but it was pretty cool for the little machines we had. We were trying it out on, so pretty neat. I noticed that it automatically publishes three apps if you go through Quick Start, so Calculator, Paint, WordPad. Where do you go if you want to see where those are published and maybe remove some or add some?
Okay, so let's go and do exactly that. I'll close this wizard out because we don't need to be in that anymore. Let's just minimize that browser down. And then if we go to the Remote Desktop Services node, left-hand side of Server Manager, then it's going to start to give us the overview of our environment. This is the incredibly helpful map of what's going on. So you can see here that we've deployed our, we've deployed the three kind of gray things that don't have a information mark on them. You think that maybe green was deployed, but it's not. In this case, it's green is available to deploy. We've deployed our web access server, we've deployed a connection broker, we've deployed a session host, and we've deployed a quick session collection as part of that. So that's just telling us what we've done. If we want to make any of these highly available, we right-click, add remote access web servers, add configure high availability for connection broker, we can add a session host server there. Gateway server, we just have to click on the icon, and we can add a server into that as well. So let's cancel that. We can also go and edit the deployment properties and sort out things like our certificates, and we'd be able to put the certificates in place so we didn't get those SSL warnings that we had earlier. But specifically on those remote apps, if we go down to the Quick Session collection, we can see that we've converted this Quick Session collection from being a desktop collection into an app collection or a remote app collection. We are saying that it's available on these servers, RDSQ, and we're saying that Calculator, Word, and Paint have been published. If we go into Tasks and do Publish Remote App Programs, we can add another application. It's going to go away. It's actually just retrieving a list of all of the executables that it can see on the server itself. And in this case, we're going to say that what we really want to publish out, because this can be kind of a useful idea, is Server Manager. So next, and we'll hit Publish. That's now going to publish our Server Manager application. It'll give us a nice little application icon. Add that into the RSS feed for anybody who is subscribed with one of the native apps. Hit close, go back down into our internet portal just here. We'll just press F5. It's added in the Server Manager icon. Go and connect to it. And within a couple of seconds, it's going to take a little longer than just launching Calculator because I have closed down that session mode from before. But in a couple of seconds, we'll get a very strange effect, which is Server Manager launching and running on a remote server. So right now, if we're going to have a look, we're currently, let's just go up here. We can see that we're currently on our
Contoso DC. Yeah, if we go into Server Manager, it's going to say that it's running on RDSQ. There we go. Just there. So that is a true remote copy of Server Manager running as an app.
Pretty cool.
Kind of nice. We also wanted to show a little bit, didn't we, about VDI. So I'm going to move across to a VDI server. And if you want to try VDI again, this could form part of the same collection that we've already deployed. But I've deployed a quick remote desktop VDI server deployment here. So it's done exactly the same thing as in the last one. It's dropped in the web access role. It's dropped in the connection broker. This time it's dropped in a virtualization host, and it's added a quick VM collection. So if I go on to collections, we'll start to see we've got one VM in our collection. It's a pooled managed collection. A couple of different types of those. We can either have a personal managed or a pooled managed. Pooled means that all of the VMs inside of the collection are identical. Anybody can go and check one out, do what they want to it, check it back in, and then it gets reset to its previous point before it was checked out. Personal one, we can go in, make changes to it. Those changes will persist just for us. We attach things called user profile disks, which allow us to have slight levels of customization, even inside of a pooled disk, but it allows us to go through. We can either also do unmanaged, and if we do an unmanaged collection, and we'll create a collection in a couple of seconds, you can actually be in a situation where you can't use the technology like the automated patching of a collection. So you want to be a little bit careful about that, but there can be very good reasons for sticking away and doing that. Let's just have a quick look at this collection inside of Hyper-V Manager. And what we'll notice is that we have a VM here called Gold VM. This, as we'll see in a couple of moments, is the template that we've used to create our VDI environment. If we have a look at its settings, it looks just like any normal virtual machine. We've got some processors, we've got some memory, we've got a hard drive. That hard drive has been sysprepped, so it's completely reusable. Let's get rid of that notification. And we've also got the network adapters that we want. So the important thing here is that the template is the hard drive and the settings for the virtual machine, and those are going to get replicated. If I go into my quick VM, do its settings, you very quickly see four processors, same amount of memory, slightly different hard drive. In this case, it's actually a child hard disk off of the original, and then there's a couple of other network connections in there, exactly as you saw in the previous one. So let's just go and quickly create a collection. Create a virtual desktop collection. So next, we then have to give it a name. I'm going to call this one Tommy. Then we get to say whether it's pooled or virtual. In this case, we're going to go with being a personal virtual desktop. And then you see that the capabilities for the collection automatically changes, just telling you what it's capable of. If we untick automatically create and manage virtual desktops, then we start to see where the capabilities come and go in the managed collection. Then we get to provide any particular settings for our virtual desktop.
And that VM, that VM you already had created prior to today. I mean, if you hadn't created that template VM, you would browse and find that VHD, correct?
Yeah, I'd have to have created a template to be starting this process off without having one in place. And actually, I wouldn't be able to complete the wizard. So right. It's kind of an essential first step. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Then we're going to say we can either, we don't have to have provided an ANSI file inside of our sysprepped image. We can do that from outside of the image. I'm going to just inject some unattend settings here. So I'm going to inject the time zone. I'm currently in Seattle, so -8 hours. We're going to say that we want that into the corp domain, and we're going to create it inside of the accounts OU. So next again, it's then going to say who's allowed access to this? What are the users and groups? Okay, let's not use the accounts OU, and let's try that. There we go. In this case, we are going to have access by given to all of our domain users. We're going to create two desktops inside the collection. We're going to give it the prefix. It always picks the first three letters of whatever name you've given to the collection. So that can occasionally cause some hilarity. In this case, we'll just change that to something slightly more meaningful. Click next again. Again, we can decide how many virtual desktops to use on each server. If we were delivering these across multiple VDI servers, then we would actually be able to load balance them at this point. Then we say whereabouts we want to store the actual image. So we'll say next to that. Then we say where we want to use our user profile disk. And this needs to be a network share. So I'm going to actually do this as RDSHBP, which I think is the name of the server. /VMs. Say next. Hopefully I've typed that in correctly. And then just allows us to confirm everything. We click create. That goes away. It will, assuming all the details are correct at this point, yep, it will go into Hyper-V and we'll start to see our gold VM being exported because we don't want to make any actual changes to that VM. We want to take a copy of it and then everything that we do to create sessions, to create collections and desktops in a collection afterwards will happen on our exported VM. Having done that, this is completely kind of published in just exactly the same way as things were before. So we can go back and find our, open up Internet Explorer, browse to our RDS web server here, and we'll be able to see our environment. Through that, we'll be able to go in and connect to any of the managed desktops that we've got inside of the environment. So that's kind of it. It's kind of really simple to start building out VDI services. And it's also kind of worth being really planful about it when you deploy them properly, putting the right roles into the right parts of the environment. We haven't really touched on things like deployment of specific chipsets and that kind of thing to be able to do remote FX or not needing those specific chipsets anymore in order to be able to do that. There's a whole bunch more stuff there, but there's tons more in-depth guidance available on TechNet as to how to kind of really go through that. I guess one of the questions that we've started to get is, can you do this on Azure IS? And Tommy, have you given that a try at all? Trying to build out RDS on Azure IS?
Yeah, just briefly. Back when it first came out, we were having some licensing discrepancy, but they fixed that. So
yeah, there's still a few little things. So we still can't put Office onto a RDS IaaS instance. That's still a little bit of an issue. But it can be used for maybe serving up your line of business applications. One thing I would point out is there's some awesome guidance on how to build out your gateway tier and also how to build out your connection broker tier inside of Azure IaaS. There's a couple of little tiny things that you need to be really careful of there. And there's some kind of nuance around how you create your cloud services inside of Azure IaaS in order to make that all completely function properly. But right. It's possible and fully supported to go and build out remote desktop in the cloud.
Yeah. Just not any client images, no VDI, but yes. Session-based only, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All got to be session-based. But you can turn on the desktop experience pack, and then you get a much more desktop-like experience.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep. You can trick somebody into thinking, you know, Windows 8 almost if you wanted to. So really cool stuff, Simon. Any other tips, you know, as far as maybe if you're going to be setting this up internally? I know we probably don't have time to go in and show storage, but maybe we should talk a little bit about what you can do with storage.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. So one of the ways that we recommend doing your storage inside of VDI, you'll see that as we were going through there, we had to provide a couple of shares to store things like our user profile disks. We have a couple of really cool storage technologies which kind of layer on top of each other. And they're well worth kind of exploring around this. So the first one is Storage Spaces, which lets you take a collection of disks, which can be spinning, they could be SSD, and aggregate them together, thin provision them, but also apply the idea of tiered storage. So essentially your spinning disks kind of become a cold storage and your SSDs become hot storage. So the most used bits come off of SSD when they're being read, and also the write-through cache is always on SSD, so everything that's written is written to SSD first. That can give you massive performance improvements. It's a really great way of building out a highly available, highly performant storage environment for basing RDS on. And also, the one other thing that makes it absolutely exceptional is that we can we have this technology called data deduplication. Layering data deduplication on top of this environment is really cool. We only support this for using with remote desktop services. We don't support it for general Hyper-V workloads, but you can dedupe your location where you're keeping your VHDX files or your VHDs. In fact, for your user collections, so user profile disks, and also for your actual VHDs for the say your VDI environment. Doing that, doing the deduplication, will save you around about 94% to 97% of your storage space.
And performance is fantastic from what I've seen.
Yeah,
it caches 5 bits. It's very, very smart about how it does that, and it doesn't really impact, as long as you're smart about when you implement the dedupe pieces. You know, you're looking at, you know, the time it takes to dedupe the first time, but really from that point going forward, it's scheduled and you can make sure it doesn't, you know, impact performance. And I haven't really seen it impact performance anyway. So really, really slick technology.
Yeah. It tends to be really absolutely awesome. When people start to use it, they start to get really amazed about how much disk space they can actually save for this kind of thing. And they're just amazed that that kind of saving also comes with a speed increase, because how often does it happen that you get to save money and get a better performance out of something?
Yeah, one of the things that the next question I usually get talk about this at events is, well, can I dedupe a normal hypercode? And the answer right now is no.
Yeah.
But from a VDI perspective, it is supported. So
yeah,
I just absolutely want to highlight that. But any closing thoughts here, Simon, you want to cover before we?
I think that, to be honest, my major closing thought is go and give it a try. Give it a try inside of building it inside of Azure IaaS, just to see how it goes. Go and get hold of the RDP clients for basically every platform that's currently available for iOS, Android, Windows, Windows Phone. Give them a try, Mac OS X as well. Give them a try and just see if it's the kind of environment that you think your users would appreciate.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I know also there's an RT app, so very nice to have that, you know, for those that are out there that are just the RT version. You know, I think that says a lot. If you have an RT, you're floating around campus or whatnot, you want to remote into something, or at home you want to remote into something, you get a full desktop experience, but you're on RT. So very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great show again, Simon. Thanks for showing us everything today, and it's been a pleasure in these two episodes. You know, folks out there, give us a try, and let us know what you think. You can always hit me up at virtuallycloud9.com, or shoot me an email, or hit me on Twitter. So, great to have you today, and thanks for joining.
Thanks so much, guys. Thank you.